The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Derek Frost for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading from the Triangle Business Journal. Today's program is generously underwritten by Brian Lee Funeral Homes, located in Raleigh, Garner, and Anger. They can be reached at 919-832-8225. They believe every life is unique and deserves to be honored so that every funeral is as unique and special as the person it represents. And we'll start on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal with the cover story headline, Street Cred, How Peace Street is Becoming an Epicenter of Downtown Raleigh Development. And the article begins inside the Triangle Business Journal with the second headline, Peace Street, From Mills and Modesty to a Rebirth in Raleigh. This article is written by Caleb Harshberger. In 1986, pro skateboarder and Raleigh native Reggie Barnes got together with some partners and decided to start a skateboard shop on downtown Raleigh's Peace Street. They called it Endless Grind. And for the last 35 years, it sold skateboard gear, accessories, and clothing and held skating events. Back then, Peace Street was an uneventful route with a smattering of square retailers and restaurants and occasional residential development. But today, all that's changing. We've seen lots of changes over the years, Barnes says, little bits at the time, and a lot more recently. Today, Peace Street is exploding with new activity with a whole lot more in the pipeline set for the years to come. Endless Grind now sits right across from the towering Smoky Hollow development as crews wrap up work on Phase 2 and planning begins for Phase 3. Also on the way is an upcoming mixed-use tower, currently zoned for up to 40 stories tall, as well as the Seaboard Station mixed-use project currently underway by William Peace University. It's a dramatic change for a quiet part of Raleigh that was a home for mill workers a century ago and later included such places as Finch's Restaurant, Watkins Shoe Shop, as well as a car wash and a laundry service. And Barnes says it's just a matter of time before the growth makes its way across the property to his store he's currently leasing. At some point, we're not exactly sure when, we'll probably have to find a new location, Barnes says. Even where we sit will have to be developed. An analysis by the Downtown Raleigh Alliance found that since 2015, the corridor has added more than 1.3 million square feet of new space, including retail and commercial space and over 1,000 residential units. Meanwhile, construction is currently underway on nearly 300,000 square feet of space, including 322 residential units, with more projects currently in the planning stages. At least three major mixed-use destinations developments are known to be in the works at various stages as boutique developers gobble up smaller lots and property owners weigh their options on the booming route. The street, currently a largely car-centric transit route, is quickly moving toward a more walkable mixed-use corridor in an incoming transition that many downtown Raleigh streets have seen over the years. Williams Realty and building company principal Owen Williams likened it to the transformation One Glenwood brought to its part of the city. The way that Glenwood South is transformed, I think it'll be the same for Peace Street, he says. Meanwhile, business owners like Barnes are increasingly weighing their options for what all this change means for them and whether there will be a space for them on Peace Street in the years to come. We do know that at some point we will have to move, he says. We have a great relationship with the owner. In the meantime, we want to be a great tenant for him so he doesn't feel the need to rush that. Decades of peace. For many years, Peace Street featured a fairly quiet stretch of roadway with a scattering of squat retail stores and eateries. Then in 1984, Raleigh developer Roland Gammon brought the first major condo project to the area with his redevelopment of the Cotton Mill. Situated at 614 Capitol Boulevard, the property dated back to the late 19th century and saw the conversion of the existing building to 50 condos. At the time, it seemed to many like a big risk and an unproven product. In the end, the project proved there was a strong market as buyers raced to reserve units. That project was followed by a few more residential projects along the Peace Street corridor over the years as growth steadily continued. In 2000, longtime Triangle investor and Raleigh Development Company principal Bobby Lewis bought the first of what would eventually be an assemblage of commercial properties along that area. Over the years, RDC would compile the properties at 708, 714, 716, 722, 726, and 804 Northwest Street and 424 West P Street, the site of Endless Grind. County records list Lewis as the buyer of the first three parcels and RDC as the buyer of the other six. And in the years since, the company has yet to announce a development plans for the site as it tends to other projects across the region. Even amid these investments, growth was slow to take off on P Street. At the time, Lewis had an office in the area. During that time, it was quiet. There wasn't much going on, he says. I watched the cotton mill get developed, then little things started happening. Some new businesses came to town and some more homes were built, but few large-scale projects were planned for that stretch of the street. Williams and Kane kick off a boom. That all began to change in 2016 when longtime Raleigh developers, Kane Realty Corporation and Williams Realty and Building Company, announced their plans for Smoky Hollow, a massive multi-phase mixed-use development that would totally transform that part of town. Williams had been amassing land at the corner of Peace and Northwest Streets for years and soon went before City Council with plans for the development. Today, the first phase is done and nearly all the work on Phase 2 is wrapped up. These include the Peace Street Apartments and the new Publix grocery store in Phase 1, and the Line Apartments and the nearly completed 421 Harrington mixed-use office tower in Phase 2. Kane and Williams now plan to turn their gaze to designing Phase 3. The third, but not final, phase of the project is currently expected to have a wide range of uses, including retail, office, hotel, and multifamily, and at least one large tower. The city agreed to rezone the site of Phase 3 to allow for development up to 40 stories tall after a contentious approval process in which the developers ultimately offered to include affordable housing in the plans. Today, design meetings for Phase 3 are just kicking off, and the developers hope to pick a design firm by this summer. Zimmer and Hoffman hop on. While Kane and Williams were still in the planning stages for Smoky Hollow, other developers were looking to get in on the action. First, in 2018, William Peace University announced plans to sell a portion of Seaboard Station, which it had bought 5 years before, for $20.75 million. The announcement kicked off a months-long search to find a buyer, which ultimately ended with a $34 million sale to D.C. developer Hoffman & Associates. The purchase was the company's first in Raleigh, and Hoffman soon after announced its plans for a $300 million mixed-use development called Seaboard Station. Across all phases, the project is expected to feature over 6,000 apartments, 130,000 square feet of retail space, a hotel, outdoor dining and entertainment space, and underground parking. After more than 2 years of zoning and site approvals from the city, construction on Phase 1 of the project began earlier this year, calling for 300 apartments and 30,000 square feet of retail across 7 stories of development. And as the work continues, Hoffman Executive Vice President John Florian says he anticipates a greater link between their destination and the Glenwood South Corridor as a mix of government-led improvements to the corridor and private development improve pedestrian access throughout that part of town. As Peace Street becomes more pedestrian-friendly, we really are liking it and would like to see an enhancement of the connection from Glenwood South to Williams Peace University and even Person Street, he says. We think that connection is going to be a focus. Hoffman plans to deliver the first phase next year and has already filed site plans for Block C, calling for 220 multifamily units plus retail space in a building 7 stories tall. Meanwhile, Wilmington firm Zimmer Development filed plans in 2019 requesting the city rezone a pair of parcels at 506 Capitol Boulevard to allow for a massive mixed-use tower up to 40 stories tall. Zimmer has yet to file site plans with the city. Those two, in combination with Smoky Hollow, represent a massive influx of commercial and residential space on Peace Street. Infrastructure in mind. As all this new space comes online, traffic continues to rise while pedestrian use is expected to explode in the coming years. For the last decade, traffic has steadily increased by 1% per year, according to Raleigh Department of Transportation Engineering Review Supervisor Bradley Kimbrell. These numbers do lag 2003 traffic counts, Kimbrell says, though he's unclear why traffic dropped after that. The street has also seen a number of roadway improvements in the form of both public projects and as part of a private development. And another major planned addition to the street calls for a large new park at the corner of Peace Street and Capitol Boulevard. For years, the city has been working toward the development of the Devereaux Meadow Park, slated for the 14 acres right across the street from Smoky Hollow, on property that was once the site of the Devereaux Meadow Baseball Park. The land is currently being used as a maintenance and vehicle service facility for the city. The city held a neighborhood meeting on May 6 to receive input from the public as it moves ahead with the planning and design process for that project. Meanwhile, developers along the street say the project has the potential to further transform that part of town in tandem with the ongoing projects. With the Peace Street improvements, the investments we've made here in Smoky Hollow and the Devereaux Meadows Park, it just enhances the entire area, Williams says. Not all these improvements have gotten off the ground. The city's previous plans to widen the sidewalks along the street were nixed due to expected project shortfalls for the 2017 transportation bond. Williams says that project would have done a lot to improve the area for pedestrians. It's not the safest place to be walking right now. Cars are darting in all over the place, and anything they can do to make pedestrian traffic a little safer, he says. Wide sidewalks make a huge difference. Still, with each new development comes new infrastructure improvements and walkability upgrades. At Smoky Hollow, the project features large walkable areas between the buildings with retail space lining the ground floors of the building. And at Seaboard Station, the development is designed to foster a walkable environment that connects to the various areas and neighborhoods around it. Where we go from here? Today, Peace Street still has a long way to go, with much of the space slated for the street still in the planning or design phases. Kane and Williams have yet to file plans for Phase 3 of Smoky Hollow, with little to no information locked down about any phases after that. Wilmington-based Zimmer Development 2 has yet to file site plans for its towers, and officials at the company did not return calls for comment. Meanwhile, many property owners with land along the route have yet to decide what they want to do, whether to develop or to pursue a sale to an interested party. At Raleigh Development Company, Lewis says they don't have plans yet, though they would like to begin talks in a year or so. Until then, he says they'll be keeping an eye on how things go, particularly with Devereaux Meadow Park. I'm anxiously watching for what the city is doing with that park, and that'll weigh in someday, he says. If the city does a park there, that'll make a load of difference. Meanwhile, businesses are having to consider if the future of Peace Street will still have a place for them in it. For Barnes and Endless Grind, he says the time may soon come for them to move off Peace Street, and he's keeping an eye out for the next great space just in case. We're looking now. We have plenty of properties in front of us, Barnes says. You know, we look at all that change, and it's inevitable for a nice upcoming city like Raleigh with a population growing like it is. You can't expect it to stay the way it has. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the continuing series, The Promise Of. The headline, Playing the Numbers Game. Why Faith Bynum says starting her CPA firm was the best decision she's ever made, even when she didn't feel quite ready. Story by Connie Gentry. About this project, the project name is based on a historical reference relating to Union Army leader William Sherman's promise of giving 40 acres to slaves after the Civil War. That promise, which came to be known as 40 acres and a mule, never came through as President Andrew Johnson rescinded the order after taking office. The magic age to become an entrepreneur was 40. That's what Faith Bynum had in her head for no particular reason back in 2012 when she was working full-time in a job she loved for a nonprofit organization and her accounting business was merely an occasional gig. In September 2014, she was laid off, and as a 34-year-old single mom, she became a full-time entrepreneur, albeit reluctantly. Faith joined forces with Facebook when a friend who had witnessed Bynum's journey to CPA status via her Facebook post asked her to serve as an accountant for the nonprofit where he was executive director. She begged off, saying she wasn't ready. His response, "I'd rather hear a slow yes than a fast no." Meanwhile, Bynum's father admonished her, "You didn't get the CPA license to sit on it." Flummoxed into submission, Bynum embarked on entrepreneurship, and it was the best business decision she's made. "If there was ever a time to bet on myself, it was then," she says. 6 years and a great staff later, and my decision has been confirmed over and over. Bynum has now reached the milestone age that she had envisioned for entrepreneurship, and her business is flourishing. In 2020, we grew revenue around 25%, and that was directly related to the needs of small businesses as a result of COVID. Hopefully, we'll see continued growth at the same or even a higher percentage, Bynum notes. A lot of people have started businesses, and as a CPA group, we want to partner with businesses to help bridge the gaps and encourage businesses to come out of the pandemic better than before. She and her team of nine are in the throes of an extended tax season, and the most prevalent issue is helping business owners understand how to treat paycheck protection program loans and economic injury disaster loans. With PPP, the first step is to determine if the loan is forgiven or what portion of the loan is forgiven. EIDL loans go on the balance sheet, and Bynum explains, are part of a long-term process that is easily managed as long as the funds are being used as specified. Once the EIDL payments start, you just decrease the payable and increase your interest expense, she says. On the PPP side, the question is whether it will be forgiven or not, which is the reason why the PPP was so popular. If the SBA has sent a check to the lender and the business doesn't have to treat the PPP as a loan, they may be cleared of all of it, or they may have to only pay back a portion. So a lot of extensions are being filed. It's a waiting game in many instances, she explains, as the timing for when a business finds out if the PPP is forgiven depends on how fast the lender submits the information to the SBA and how quickly the SBA processes it. Early in the pandemic, Bynum's firm was helping clients prepare taxes and the financial information needed to apply for those loans. There was a flurry of activity as new clients were added to the firm and existing clients sought more counsel. We were seeing businesses from all industries. It was a time when everyone had to act fast, she says. Businesses that needed loans had to act quickly, and firms had to find the capacity to service clients quickly. We did not work directly with loan officers, but helped our clients with tax preparations and whatever they needed to give loan officers. The majority of the clients her firm serves are small businesses, most with fewer than 10 employees, and many have less than $1 million in gross sales. COVID made most businesses pause, and if they were behind on taxes or behind on bookkeeping, which are the foundational pieces that all businesses need, they had to catch up. We came across a lot of business that were behind, often because the business owner was also the janitor and the accountant, and they were just trying to keep the business going and make payroll, she says. Bynum sees her role and that of her firm as one of showing grace, as well as educating and training businesses on the essentials of financial statements and accounting functions. She uses social media, primarily Facebook, but also LinkedIn and Instagram, to deliver information and market her firm. I have the latitude to say that we're female-led, minority-led CPA firm, and I've had many invitations from people who had appreciated seeing my vulnerability, my entrepreneurship, and my CPA walk, she says. I have not wanted to keep this journey to myself. I try to take on as many mentees as I can. The accounting profession is greatly lacking in diversity, and this is most true at senior levels and among firm partners. According to the Association of International Public Accountants, AICPA, in 2018, 91% of partners in CPA firms were white, 4% were Asian, 2% were Latinx, 1% were Black, and 1% were multi-ethnic. The remaining 1% were made up of American Indian or undisclosed ethnicities. Scott Showalter, CPA, director of the Master of Accounting, MAC, program at NC State University's Jenkins Graduate School of Management, says the school has been focused on increasing diversity for several years. Of the 139 students who are in the current class, 80 are women, 59 are men, and 37% of the students are non-white, he says. When it comes to the CPA firms, the problem with gender diversity is not a discrimination issue, it's a retention issue. As the MAC student enrollment at NC State indicates, women are actively pursuing accounting degrees. However, they are less likely to remain in the profession. According to the AICPA 2019 Trends Report, only 23% of the partners in CPA firms are women, although 42% of the CPAs in firms are female. Showalter suggests this trend highlights the difficulty firms have in retaining the women they hire. Of the women graduating this year, 16% are Black and 12% of the men graduating are Black, he says. We're not where we need to be yet, but we are seeing more diverse applicants to the program. Other than the HBCUs, all of the schools in the UNC system struggle with diversity. In creating more diverse student enrollment, Showalter says it's not about recruiting the masses. You have to increase diversity one student at a time. We visit the HBCUs. We've held a variety of social media events during COVID to attract students to our MAC program. We increase the diversity of our website, and we work through the National Association of Black Accountants to help identify and recruit students. Recruiting accountants, whether to school or to work, is a challenge. From Bynum's experience, the harder decision for an entrepreneur is knowing when to expand the talent base. Business owners have to transition from asking, how can I afford to hire, to asking, if I don't hire, then what? As an owner, you don't want to take steps that are too deep if the business is not ready to sustain onboarding staff. But you don't want to limit your capacity to take on new projects. And there are also two news items in the Promise Of section. Black Friday Market continues growth. Black Friday Market opened in its permanent downtown Raleigh space on December 18. By March 18, it had generated $105,000 for the small business owners whose merchandise it carries. Jasmine Bullock, owner and manager, says the market space is a collaborative effort pulled together by the organizers of the Black Dollar NC Directory and the Black Flea Market. The Black Friday Market, which is intended to be a one-stop shopping experience like a department store that carries apparel, beauty, art, housewares, and food items, has roughly 95 black businesses represented and is accepting more product and businesses. The store, which is open every day but Monday, hosts events to pull in more traffic. Black on the Block celebrations will be held May 8, May 22, and June 26 from 5 p.m. to 9 p.m. We're doing this as an add-on to provide a shopping experience alongside the Dine Out Downtown events, Bullock says. PNC and NCRC commit $88 billion over 4 years. In a landmark pledge, PNC Bank and the National Community Reinvestment Coalition, or NCRC, announced the creation of a 4-year, $88 billion community benefits plan to increase financial resources for low and moderate income LMI communities. Since 2016, NCRC has facilitated similar agreements with 15 bank groups for a combined total of $298 billion to be allocated for lending, investments, and philanthropy. According to the NCRC announcement, the PNC plan represents the largest commitment ever pledged by a bank to the communities where it takes deposits. The $88 billion plan is being earmarked with $47 billion for home mortgage loans to people in communities of color, $26.5 billion for lending to small businesses and communities that are a majority people of color and or LMI, and $14.5 billion for community development lending and investment, including investments into programs for housing tax credits. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle happenings, written by managing editor Dane Huffman. Time to hoard chicken wings. First it was toilet paper and hand sanitizer, then lumber and logs. Now the pandemic's most recent shortage, chicken wings. We're paying three times as much as we were paying about 14 months ago, says co-owner Ryan Malley of Wings Over Raleigh on Hillsborough Street. Malley, who has been in the wings business 17 years, says, as far as pricing, I've never seen it as high as this year. So far, Wings Over Raleigh has only modest price increases, but Malley, like all in the business, is eager for the wholesale price spikes to disappear. The source of the problem has been traced to various reasons, including increased demand, processing plants shutting down early in the pandemic, shortages in labor, and winter storms hitting key chicken-producing places such as Texas. The supply is kind of tight right now, but we are turning around production where we are producing more birds, says Bob Ford, executive director of the North Carolina Poultry Federation. We are getting back to normal, he adds. As far as a long-term shortage, there won't be one. Ford says North Carolina is number two in the country behind Georgia in chicken production and cranks out about 10% of the nation's chickens. Generally, Ford says, chickens spend about 54 days at a chicken farm before going to a processing plant and being packaged in a matter of hours. He expects the supply to rise again and quips, we need a chicken that could grow 4 wings. Greensboro's Tanger Center not giving up its shot at Hamilton. The new Tanger Center in Greensboro continues to add some major performances despite delays to its opening because of the pandemic. The $90 million facility, which seats 3,000, was scheduled to open in March 2020, but that was delayed. No opening date has been announced, but Hamilton is scheduled for April 6 through 24, 2022. The center has some major Broadway performances scheduled, including Wicked, Beautiful, and Come From Away, and ticket interest has been intense. Industrial Park adds major tenant. A Raleigh industrial park landed a massive new tenant recently, signing on a national cabinet manufacturer to lease 100,000 square feet of space as demand for industrial space continues to explode across the region. Duke Realty Corporation announced it has signed on J&K Cabinetry to lease the entire Walnut Creek 3071 facility at 3071 Business Creek Drive in Raleigh. J&K Cabinetry is a manufacturer of wood cabinets and vanities. Batista Orsino, Vice President of Leasing and Development for Duke Realty in Raleigh, says, "This long-term lease agreement with a high-quality tenant ensures 100% occupancy at Walnut Creek 3071 for the next decade." Highwood CEO optimistic on Apple. CEOs are talking up Apple's 3,000-job project on their earnings calls. Ted Klink, CEO of Raleigh-based REIT, Highwoods Properties, said Apple and investments by firms like it validate the massive bets companies like Highwoods are making on demand for office space returning to pre-pandemic levels. "These employers are not planning major work-from-home initiatives in our markets," Klink said on a recent earnings call. "Rather, their major investments represent new workplaces that will bring employees together versus working from home." Law firm looks ahead in key fields. Local law firms are seeing a surge in activity as the country moves closer to pulling out of the pandemic, and some are staffing up to meet demands. What we are seeing is that in the specialty areas, corporate, healthcare, finance, it couldn't be busier, says Mary Beth Johnston, the managing partner for K&L Gates' office in Research Triangle Park. The global firm has 22 attorneys in RTP, with all focused on healthcare and government enforcement. "The largest critical mass of healthcare attorneys is in our Research Triangle Park office," she says. But the firm is expecting more work when it comes to helping clients defend government investigations. That's why it recently hired Robert Higdon Jr., who had served as the U.S. attorney for the Eastern District of North Carolina in the Trump administration. "We've been waiting for somebody with the experience and expertise of Bobby for a long time," Johnston says. For example, she says, an institution such as a hospital can really be trying to get everything done correctly with Medicaid or Medicare, and people out there disagree with how you do it, and they have the ability to file a lawsuit. And of course, RTP is at the epicenter of future growth, with Apple and Google adding jobs in the triangle. "It will only enhance what is happening," Johnston says, adding, "The intersection between those types of companies and healthcare has been increasing at a rapid pace, and technology is driving healthcare." And finally, we have a big number, 84.5%. That's the percentage of businesses in Wake County that employ 20 people or fewer. And while the Triangle has recently celebrated its big jobs wins, the market also joined in the national celebration of small businesses with Small Business Week, which runs through May 8. And now we turn to the On Finance and Capital page in the Triangle Business Journal, written by Lauren Onasorge. First headline, Epic leads robust funding. Epic was not the only firm raising money in April. While the total may have made it seem like Epic Games, which self-reported a whopping $1 billion funder, was the only one raising cash in April, that's far from true. A look at fundraising filings in the Triangle shows investors were taking a lot of chances in April, including banking on small companies. Altogether, Triangle growth companies raised nearly $1.3 billion in the month, and they funded a variety of innovators. Take Sarah Hall, who's not your typical entrepreneur. Hall, a highway patrol dispatcher, had a dream, literally. She had returned from a fundraising gala in September 2019 when she dreamed a solution to a problem she saw during her day job. Law enforcement officials weren't wearing ballistic vests because they were uncomfortable. Hall saw the solution, a shirt that would go under the vest and help officers avoid the chafing and bruising they were complaining about at work. And that dream became a company, Wake Forest-based Thin Gold Line. Sue Temple, chief visionary officer at Thin Gold Line, said the money, $530,000 in debt capital from two investors, according to a securities filing, will go toward a product launch initially aimed at law enforcement. In Durham, a startup with Duke University roots raised $375,000 from the likes of Duke basketball alum Jahlil Okafor and others. NextPay Careers, a startup led by Kyle Mumma, helps college athletes prepare for careers after graduation. The cash will help the firm hire its first employees to further build out its support platform, he said. We're ready to take the next step, Mumma says. Fortune 500 firm picked Virginia over Greenville. A Fortune 500 company considered three North Carolina counties in 2020 before it ultimately picked Virginia for a new manufacturing operation. Representatives for Philadelphia-based Crown Holdings, which produces metal packaging, visited Pitt, Edgecombe, and Gaston counties before selecting Henry County, Virginia, for a 126-job operation, according to documents from the NC Department of Commerce provided to TBJ through a records request. Officials scrambled in December to work up an incentives proposal, though the terms were redacted from the records. By mid-December, the North Carolina sites had narrowed to just Greenville in Pitt County. The firm made multiple site visits to Pitt County, including one in December with the company's CEO and executive leadership team. The company publicly announced its choice of Virginia in February, a state where it already employs more than 200 people. The firm was approved for a $3 million Virginia Investment Performance Grant, as well as $1 million from the Commonwealth's Opportunity Fund. Docs reveal Grail's big expansion plans. Nearly 1 year ago, a California firm focused on early detection of cancer picked Research Triangle Park for a $100 million 400-job project. But that may just be a portion of the overall investment. Newly released documents show Grail Incorporated envisions a much larger project in the region. A year ago, the firm was approved for incentives worth up to $5.2 million over 12 years for its RTP laboratory. But communications released last month by the North Carolina Department of Commerce via a public records request reference a phase two, one that could increase the overall job count from 398 to 737. And we also have a section called He Said It on this page with a quote from Apple CEO Tim Cook, 2 days after announcing a 3,000-job investment in Research Triangle Park. Over the next 5 years, we will invest $430 billion, creating 20,000 jobs in the process. The investments will support American innovation and drive economic benefits in every state, including a new North Carolina campus and job-creating investments in innovative fields like silicon engineering and 5G technology. And finally, we have a big number, $100 million. The assets under management mark passed by Raleigh-based Anchor Capital. 2020 for us highlighted what we've known all along, that when you're in periods of heightened volatility and uncertainty, you just have to trust your own judgment and be patient, managing partner Clay Dunnigan said. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the On Restaurants and Deals page, written by Erica Wells. Tough road to recovery. Triangle restaurants, bars, still face many challenges. Most COVID-19 restrictions in North Carolina could be lifted in time for summer, but it may take longer for Triangle restaurants and bars to rebuild their workforce ahead of returning to full operations. Governor Roy Cooper said that given the current rate of vaccinations and the fact that the state has not seen a sharp increase in daily new cases of COVID-19, he could lift capacity restrictions on the state's hospitality sector as early as June 1. Following Cooper's latest executive order, restaurants remain limited to 75% of indoor capacity, while bars are set at 50%. But the food industry is still struggling to hire and retain employees following the mass layoffs that occurred at the beginning of the pandemic. Before the pandemic, COPA in Durham had about 18 to 20 team members, says owner Elizabeth Turnbull. At the lowest point during the winter, when the Cuban restaurant had to cut back the most, the staff dropped to about 5 to 7 people. Now Turnbull has about a dozen employees. There's a hiring crunch going on right now, and it's very hard to get the right staff with the right experience to provide the level of service we're used to providing, she says. That's the challenge we face as we seek to expand. In the last year, the food service industry has been hit the hardest as layoffs and reduced hours have left many seeking new careers. And extended unemployment benefits have made some workers reluctant to return to work. I think this may be temporary, but I wouldn't say it's short term. We will be feeling this for a while, Turnbull says. She plans to retain current employees and attract new hires by offering at least $15 an hour at gross rate at the front of the house, which she has been doing since before the pandemic. Also, a 20% living wage fee is added to customer checks to supplement the staff's pay. Additionally, she has given raises for kitchen staff. Giorgio's Hospitality opens new Italian restaurant in Chapel Hill. One of the Triangle's most acclaimed chefs officially opened his newest restaurant in Chapel Hill on April 30. Giorgio's Hospitality Group owner, Giorgio's Bacazzias, features modern Italian cuisine at Osteria Giorgi at 201 South Elliott Road. Osteria Giorgi is Bacazzias' third restaurant in Chapel Hill, in addition to Bin 54 Steakhouse and Cellar and Kippo's Greek Taverna, and the 11th in the Triangle. The restaurant is named in honor of Bacazzia's late friend George Tarantini, a former soccer coach at NC State University who was born in Italy. The menu includes fresh dishes with local food and Italian cheeses, braised meats, North Carolina seafood, pasta, and Italian wines. Cary Tech Firm acquired for $58 million. A Cary-based perinatal software company has been acquired for $58 million by a global firm based in the United Kingdom. Perigen, which uses artificial intelligence to mitigate issues in childbirth, has been purchased by Halma, a group of life-saving technology companies. Halma has over 40 companies in more than 20 countries. Its total revenue in 2020 was $1.86 billion. In the deal for Perigen, Halma will pay a cash consideration. In 2020, Perigen surpassed $20 million in annual revenue and grew about 25% over the previous year. Perigen has about 80 to 85 employees, with most based in Cary and others across the U.S. The company also has a small office in Tel Aviv, Israel. And now in a section called He Said It, a quote from Stephen Smith, CEO of McKim & Creed, on his new role at the Raleigh-based engineering firm. McKim & Creed is an exceptionally well-run business that has had strong growth over the last 6 years. My first responsibility is to continue the wonderful dynamics that exist within the business. And finally, we have a big number, $20 billion plus. The global value of losses due to e-commerce fraud expected for 2021, according to a Juniper Research report. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the On Real Estate page written by Caleb Harshberger. Midtown scores funding. Massive Raleigh development secures $40 million loan. The developer behind the $1 billion Midtown Exchange project in Raleigh is gearing up to begin infrastructure work at the site after closing on a construction loan earlier this month. Raleigh developer DeWitt Carolinas closed on a $40 million loan to fund pre-development activities and infrastructure construction as the company looks to go vertical on the first phase of the project later this year. Avison Young principals Wes Boatwright, Mike Yavinsky, and John Goldstein arranged the loan. The group operates out of the firm's Washington, D.C. office. Officials from DeWitt were not available to comment. The loan comes after a year of uncertainty in capital markets, especially in the office, retail, and hospitality sectors, as underwriters scrambled to factor in the impact of the pandemic on rent increases, absorption, and other risk analyses. There was a lot of uncertainty about, will people be paying their rent? Are people just going to default across the board? Boatwright says. I think people have been pleasantly surprised with how the economy has survived. While many companies and businesses have faced immense challenges amid the pandemic, office rental rates have been relatively steady in the Triangle as tenants made the shift to remote work and look to sublet space. Now, more than a year into the pandemic, Boatwright says lending has begun opening up amid optimism around vaccines and hopes for a potential return to some sort of normalcy later this year. Now that the vaccine has arrived, it's very liberating, Boatwright says. Everything is driven by people's mental states, and people are way more confident, more positive. Last fall, DeWitt Carolinas filed plans for MTX1, the first of two mirroring towers to be connected by a pedestrian skybridge. The tower is set to feature 330,000 square feet of Class A office space, 19,000 square feet of retail, and 5,000 square feet of conference and meeting centers across 12 stories. At the time, the company said it planned to begin construction on the tower in mid-2021. The project is situated on 2.5 acres at 900 St. Albans Drive. Investor snags upscale Morrisville apartments. A relatively new high-end apartment community in Morrisville sold last week in a more than $75 million deal. On April 27, Raleigh-based Dominion Realty Partners sold the 318 Shiloh Crossing apartment community to a fund sponsored by CBRE Global Investors for $75.7 million or $238,050 a unit. The apartment community is situated on 48 acres at 3000 Dominion Ridge Circle by a Walmart-anchored retail center. The location of this community is irreplaceable. It has all the things that we look for in a great multifamily site: proximity to retail, proximity to jobs, and easy access to the entire triangle, says Chris Carlino, COO of Dominion Realty Partners. The size of the site also allowed us to incorporate a lot of natural, open, green space, which we believe is paramount to our customers, especially since COVID-19. Dominion began work on the community in 2018, at the time saying it represented a $59 million investment. County records show the project was delivered last year. The community features studio, 1, 2, and 3-bedroom apartments, with rental rates ranging from $1,049 a month for smaller units to as much as $1,824 for larger units, according to Apartments.com. Carrboro apartments sell for $23 million. On April 30th, Republic Properties Corporation bought the 144-unit Bridges at Chapel Hill apartment community in Carrboro in a $23.6 million sale, or $163,888 per unit. The property is situated on 8 acres at 142 BPW Club Road by a collection of other apartment communities near the Chapel Hill Tennis Club. The sellers acquired the property in 2016 for $15.5 million when Kettler, a real estate development and property management firm based in Tysons, Virginia, teamed up with the Stillman Group of Scarsdale, New York, to buy the property along with another apartment community in Greensboro. Compass launches Raleigh office. On April 27, New York brokerage firm Compass Incorporated announced it's launching an office in Raleigh and bringing on 55 agents to support its presence across the region. The move comes less than 1 month after the company hit public markets. Compass looks to supply its brokers with a combination of technology and work management infrastructure, plus tech-centric lead generation and financing programs to help buyers. Principal agents joining Compass in Raleigh include Gretchen Coley, Linda Trevor, David Waters, Debbie Van Horn, Margaret Struble, Susan Ungerleader, Chloe Seymour, and Johnny Chappell. Altogether, the 55 agents represent more than $420 million in sales volume for 2020, according to Compass. And finally, we have a big number, 336. A Georgia developer with a growing portfolio of large apartment projects in the Triangle has filed plans for its next development, calling for hundreds of new apartments in Northeast Raleigh. In April, Atlanta-based Wood Partners filed plans for the Town Center apartments, calling for 336 units across 9 buildings, each 3 or 4 stories high. The project is situated on 16 acres at 6420 Capitol Boulevard, just north of the Triangle Town Center and next to the Interstate 540 interchange. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the On Healthcare page, written by Sonia Warak. Papas scores another exit. VC adds another successful deal as Pfizer grabs company. With the announcement April 26 that Pfizer acquired Amplyx Pharmaceuticals, Durham-based venture capital firm Pappas Capital has successfully ushered another company exit from its portfolio, and the gravy train isn't expected to stop there. Kyle Rosbach, managing partner at Pappas Capital, says the firm has 14 companies in the portfolio, and of those, just 5 have yet to generate a liquidity event, whether through an initial public offering or a merger and acquisition process. The firm is working with those companies to ensure they have a path to liquidity in the next 12 to 18 months, he says. Most of the companies in the portfolio at this point, we can see where we'd like them to head, Rossbach says. It's just our job to help them get there. The Pfizer acquisition of San Diego-based Amplix, which focuses on therapeutics for life-threatening invasive fungal infections in the immunocompromised, follows other recent successful exits. Renio Pharmaceuticals went public for a debut price of $15 per share earlier this month. BioAtla Incorporated went public in December for an initial offering price of $18 per share. And Velos Bio was acquired by a Merck subsidiary a month before that in a deal worth $2.75 billion. In total, 22 drugs coming out of the Pappas portfolio have been approved by the Food and Drug Administration, according to founder Art Pappas. Rossbach says that a portfolio drug going into Phase 1 trials has an 11% chance of gaining FDA approval, while Pappas-backed companies have a successful hit rate of 1 in every 3 taking a drug to market, Rossbach says. The firm's most recent investment, led by Alex Affray, was in Morrisville-based Istari Oncology, which focuses on fighting brain tumors with a modified polio virus, and that recently raised $43.5 million. The other investor was a large New York hedge fund, Rossbach says. We're the local investor and glad to support the company locally, Rossbach says. We think this could be a really interesting option for patients who otherwise have really very little hope with these types of brain tumors. NC State budget could add $1.2 billion by expanding. North Carolina is one of a dozen states that chose not to expand Medicaid through the Affordable Care Act. Expanding Medicaid now could net the state $1.2 billion over 2 years because of financial incentives included in the American Rescue Plan Act, according to the Kaiser Family Foundation. The ACA included a provision to expand Medicaid to people that made up to 138% of the poverty line and covers 90% of the costs of that coverage. The ARPA includes provisions that would bump up the federal Medicaid matching rate by 5 percentage points for 2 years on top of other incentives. A study done by Georgetown University's Center for Children and Families released last week found the uninsured rate for non-elderly workers was 10.2% in Wake County, 13.2% in Franklin County, 14.2% in Durham County, and 8.9% in Orange County, 16.9% in Chatham County, and 15.3% in Johnson County. The study found the top industry sectors for adults that fall into the coverage gap are accommodation and food service, 16%, retail, 15.4%, and construction, 10.9%. Cary Pharma lands global licensing agreement. Cary-based Veloxis Pharmaceuticals has entered into a global licensing agreement with French company OSE Immunotherapeutics to develop, manufacture, and commercialize FR-104, a biologic drug meant to block the immune response that leads to organ rejection in patients who have received a solid organ transplant. The licensing agreement includes an upfront payment to OSE of 7 million euros, or $8.14 million, tiered royalties and up to 315 million euros, $378 million, in potential milestone payments to OSE. We believe that there's an opportunity to bring innovation back into the transplant space, says Veloxis CEO Craig Collard. The growing company moved to a 28,000-square-foot office space in Cary in February and is expected to add 25 to 30 jobs during the next 12 months. And finally, in a section called He Said It, a quote from Syneos Health CFO Jason Meggs, speaking to the recent flurry of activity such as Thermo Fisher Scientific's acquisition of PPD, seen in the clinical research organization space. I feel fortunate that I jumped into this business 16 years ago because it's been a business that's grown every year since then. So it's been a really strong business and continues to be that. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the editor's notebook on the Viewpoint page, written by Sugata Mukherjee, who is editor-in-chief of the Triangle Business Journal. The headline, "It's time for us to wean off government checks." A slew of government reports, surveys, and economic statistics were released in the past few days, and almost all of them point to an economy that now needs to wean off government assistance. Without a doubt, and the numbers prove it, stimulus checks have helped Americans tremendously, which in turn has helped businesses stay afloat. The Administrative Office of the U.S. Courts released its annual bankruptcy report that shows bankruptcy filings dropped 38% for the year ended March 2021 when compared to the previous year. New filings fell in all federal courts, including the bankruptcy courts, as many federal courts closed their doors to in-person business, stated the note from the U.S. courts. In addition, unemployment began to moderate and state lockdown orders depressed personal expenditures. Increased government benefits and moratoriums on evictions and certain foreclosures also may have eased financial pressures in many households. As individuals now begin to spend the stimulus money received in different tranches, small business across the country are sounding optimistic. A First Citizens Bank survey released May 3 concludes 80% of small businesses are confident in business growth over the next 12 months. In essence, putting money in as many pockets helped, and clearly it was needed. But rising prices of raw materials and a widespread shortage of parts may now be threatening to create enough headwinds for the economy. And it all starts with the labor force. If the labor force that is unemployed is reluctant to get back in the employment line because of higher unemployment checks, small businesses, especially retailers, will suffer. Anecdotal evidence suggests this already is happening. What may be more concerning is the shortage in skilled labor may keep the prices high because of the manufacturing strain. On May 3, the Institute for Supply Management, ISM, said its manufacturing index fell to 60.7% in April from a 38-year high of 65% in the prior month. The number is still very strong, but now we have to worry about inflation. Worker absenteeism, short-term shutdowns due to past shortages, and difficulties in filling and filling open positions continue to be issues that limit manufacturing growth potential, said Timothy Fior, chairman of the ISM survey. What isn't a problem is demand. To meet that demand, we need to make sure the supply is available, and it starts with government policy. Rather than issuing stimulus checks to everyone through multiple tranches, this is the time to devise a new strategy to get workers back to work to support our critical infrastructure. Without a doubt, there will be people in need of a stimulus check, but we need to use a fiscal syringe, not a hose. If we manage to increase the supply of our goods and services to meet the demand, prices will get under control and inflation will remain in check. I agree with the Federal Reserve on that, although I am beginning to wonder if the Fed can keep its promise, keep interest rates near zero through 2023. The U.S. economy has made a remarkable recovery thanks to some macro choices made in Washington, but we are reaching a new phase of growth, and we have to let go of a lot of the training wheels that were put on during the pandemic. And it all starts with turning down, not off, the spigot. Now we turn to some general news stories in the Triangle Business Journal. Raleigh City Council okays two major developments. This is written by Caleb Harshberger. The Raleigh City Council has signed off on rezoning requests clearing the way for a mixed-use development with room for thousands of apartments in Midtown and another to allow for more development downtown. During its regular meeting May 4, the council voted to approve a 20-story mixed-use project by the Raleigh Wegmans and a 12-story mixed-use development in Glenwood South. Northside Center in Midtown. Council members voted unanimously to approve a request from Charlotte-based Spectrum Companies and FCA Partners to rezone the Northside Center in Midtown by the Raleigh Wegmans to allow for a major mixed-use development up to 20 stories and calling for up to 1.5 million square feet of office space, 75,000 square feet of retail, and 2,000 residential units. The project is situated on 33 acres at 1201 Front Street. The companies bought the property early last year for $59 million, the site is currently populated by a collection of office, government, and industrial tenants. Johnson and Glenwood. The council also unanimously approved a rezoning request for Raleigh developer Blue Ridge Realty's Johnson and Glenwood project in Glenwood South, clearing the way for up to 12 stories of development with up to 150,000 square feet of office space, up to 293 multifamily units, and 27,580 square feet of retail. The project is situated on 1.4 acres at 603, 605, 607, 609 Glenwood Avenue, and 608, 610, and 612 Johnson Street across from Glenwood Towers. Blue Ridge has been accumulating the properties that make up the site for years. The company has been a major developer and property owner in Glenwood South for decades. Lead Mine Road. The City Council also heard from the public on a controversial proposal to rezone a collection of properties on Lead Mine Road to allow for a residential development. The project is situated at 4707 Lead Mine Road off Glenwood Avenue near Crabtree Valley Mall. The request has been the subject of pushback from some residents, leading the developer to downscale the plans from up to 7 stories to 4 stories, but still, opposition remains. The council voted to keep the public hearing open until its June 1 meeting, with plans to vote on the request at the June 15 meeting. Cary Hotel property sells for $3.2 million. A North Carolina-based hotelier has purchased the site for a proposed hotel in Cary for $3.2 million as plans for the project move forward. Greensboro-based Daily 7 bought the 7.2-acre property at 1623 North Harrison Avenue from Joel Lawson Williams on April 23, according to Wake County Deed Records. The company closed on the transaction after the town of Cary approved site plans for North Harrison Hotels, according to Noel Anderson, in-house counsel and director of real estate at Daily 7. The project calls for a 7-story hotel with 252 rooms. It will be one building with 2 hotels under Marriott's Courtyard Inn and Resident Inn brands, with shared lobby space and other common areas. Anderson had previously said he hoped construction would begin in early 2021, but now work may not start until late 2022 as the hotel industry still feels the effects of the pandemic. Like all hospitality companies, the past year has been pretty difficult for us, but we have other projects in the development that are ahead of this one, so it depends on when those get completed, he said. And that was written by Erica Wells. And we'll finish with the Business Pulse survey. The question, what is your favorite grocery store in the Triangle? Total number of responses, 222. 35% chose Harris Teeter, 29% Wegmans, 11% Publix, 9% The Fresh Market, 6% Aldi, 5% Food Lion, and 5% Other. And we'll stop there as we've run out of time for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The Triangle Business Journal is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Today's program is generously underwritten by Brian Lee Funeral Homes, located in Raleigh, Garner, and Anger. They can be reached at 919-832-8225. They believe every life is unique and deserves to be honored, so that every funeral is as unique and special as the person it represents. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. So long until next time, and thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.